Hello, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. Calliope Awards for 2013 were presented on Wednesday, April 24th. The name Calliope means beautiful voiced, like the muse, the inspiration of eloquence and poetry. A calliope is a musical instrument, a steam organ, the type used in a carousel. And a species of hummingbird is Stellula calliope, meaning little star. Finally, Calliope is the student journal of art and literature published every spring at Northern Virginia Community College, Annandale. It is a collaboration of the Departments of English and Liberal Arts under sponsorship of the Division of Languages and Literature. We are bringing you some presentations of remarkable, talented people. We hope you enjoy this program. Here is a winner in the category of fiction as she reads from her work. First prize, Amanda Ganser Miller, A Broken Man.
You can tell a broken man by the way he stands. No matter how perfectly postured he tries to make himself appear, his chin is always tilted slightly downward. His sallow cheeks add years to his face, and he keeps his hands in his pockets because he doesn't want you to see them shaking. Every time your gaze meets that of a broken man, he seems to be asking a question. Why me? Why us? Why now? He will silently but desperately be pleading for you to do something that he knows you cannot do. All he wants is to make the pain go away, to go back and change his mistake. More likely than not, the first time machine will be invented by a broken man. The most important feature of a broken man are his eyes. He always seems to be staring at something you cannot see. His eyes are empty of anything but sadness and regret. They are a blank map to a lost soul. He has no words to tell you how he feels, but a broken man's eyes say it all. He's sorry for everything. A broken man's smiles are cracked, just like the pieces of his shattered heart. It was hard to say why things like this happened. They just did. The reason I was standing in a cemetery on an icy day in November, waiting for a one-year-old to be plunged 6 feet under, completely eluded me. The facts, of course, were clear. I'd come with my wife. She was friends with the boy's mother. But somehow, I felt there was a deeper meaning that I wasn't quite grasping. An hour before, at the wake, I'd barely been able to keep myself composed. When I first walked up to the open casket, what I found completely surprised me. Dead people weren't supposed to look like angels. Then again, this wasn't just a dead person, but a child, a baby. I hadn't known him, and suddenly I wished I had. It's not that I was a kid person, because I wasn't. My wife and I had decided not to have them a long time ago. But now, when faced with such a tragedy, I couldn't help but wonder what it would be like to wake up every morning to find something so precious and to know that you had helped create it. There was just something about someone so purely innocent that was appealing. A source of truth in a world that had gone so terribly wrong. Then again, what would it be like to have something like that taken away? To be so completely violated, to be robbed of the reason you woke up in the morning? I realized what the boy's parents must have been going through, and guilt washed over me like a wave, one that comes out of nowhere and leaves you breathless. Why was it that the innocent always made up for the sins of the guilty? Absolutely disgusting was what it was. Another glance at his cherubic face, and I was running down the hall in search of a bathroom. Seconds later, I'd puked up all of the disgust, which was quickly replaced with mournful sorrow. At the burial, I found myself distracted as the pastor delivered his final words to the boy. The last of the leaves were still clinging to the trees, but the wind seemed determined to pull them away and send them flying into forever. The ground was wet, but it wasn't raining. The soft crying of mourners echoed throughout, and I set my gaze on them. One woman, probably in her late 60s, and whom I took to be the boy's grandmother, was standing close to the casket, letting the tears flow freely from her swollen eyes. The whole time, I never once saw her lift a finger to wipe a tear away. Her misery was unveiled. As the casket was lowered into the ground, I saw my first truly broken heart. A petite blonde woman burst out in uncontrollable sobs. Her legs caved out from under her as she fell to her knees and she screamed for her baby. It wasn't fair, and she couldn't stand it. She reached for the casket and held on for dear life. She bargained, promised to trade her own life for his. Others around shook their heads in pity. I don't know how she bore the pain, but I'm sure she would have let them bury her with him if they'd let her. Finally, the old woman gently pulled the mother away. Slowly, everybody else began to drift away too. It was over. Only it wasn't. I told my wife to go home, that I'd catch a cab. For a few moments, I just stared at the newly covered hole in the ground, wondering how many other holes it had created. Tears that I hadn't wanted the others to see welled in my eyes. I wandered over to the base of a willow tree and sank to the ground, with my head between my knees. It had started to drizzle lightly, but I continued to sit. A few moments later, a voice made me jump. "God's crying for him," he said. The man was tall and wiry. The dark circles under his eyes indicated that he hadn't slept in days. It looked like it hurt him just to stand. He was staring up at the sky, his tears blending with the rain. "For who?" I asked, already knowing the answer. "My son," he said. "He's crying for my son." "I'm so sorry. I can only imagine what you're going through." Suddenly, the man was angry. He glared at me accusingly. "Why do people always say that? It's like you're asking me to comfort you and say it's okay. It will never be okay." Tears poured even harder down his wind-chapped cheeks. "You're right," I said. "I didn't mean to offend you. I don't know. I should probably go." I started to walk away. "Wait, don't go," he pleaded. "Why?" I turned back to face him. "Because when I'm alone, I remember the crash. I remember all the pain I caused and how much my wife hates me, even if she doesn't come right out and say it." Pain, I had noticed through this terrible mess of a day, came in so many different forms, but there seemed to be one common denominator. It destroyed all within its path, left no soul that it touched unbroken. I also knew that the man in front of me had suffered some of the worst pain imaginable, not only because his son was dead, but because it was his fault. He went on to tell me a story I sometimes wish I had never heard.
Next is a winner in the category of English as a Second Language as he reads his nonfiction work. David Chung, A Hive with Human Scent.
A Hive with Human Scent by David. All living things fight for space, water, food, or some other need, while all parents who are in Korea fight for private education for their children. The cost of it is often beyond the average family's ability to pay. Parents are facing higher expenses for their children's private education, and so are my parents. They're a couple working together for a living. They worked hard, thus they do not exist in my childhood memory. Because my parents were stuck in society, a place to conquer or die, my grandparents have fed me and housed me. My grandmother used to piggyback rides. My grandparents had 7 daughters who each possess strong individuality and 1 son who is like a sheep to be slaughtered in front of his sisters. They watched each other grow up, so they were good and nurturing. Everything I saw, heard, and learned was different from my peers. Sometimes, even before I knew it, I spoke like an old man, so my friends usually did not understand what I meant. Although we were busy bees, we always got together whenever there were family functions. After gathering at the hive, we undid all burdens and caught up with one another. We shared all sorts of emotions, from stress to gossip. Though there was barely any space to sit at the table, we all sat together and shared a hearty meal. This meal tastes like joy, anger, sorrow, and pleasure. We always lost track of time as we were having too much fun. Our hive vibrated with our laughter. We could smell the human affection there. We did not seek for happiness, but rather, happiness knocked on our door. Thanks.
The Calliope Committee is grateful to many people at Nova Annandale, staff, faculty, and students for their generous support and creativity. Robert Brown of Nova's Web Services and Digital Media served as technical editor. Nova, we are partners in your success. For Calliope, I'm Shirley Noon.